You're listening to the public feed of Carefree Highway Revisited, which includes only a portion of this conversation. To hear the complete discussion, become an FM Plus subscriber. Sign up in Apple Podcasts or see the show notes for details.
The first guest of the evening is truly a poet. He's an artist. He is a friend and an inspiration to anyone who I think who has ever played the guitar or tried to write poetry. Would you please welcome Gordon Lightfoot?
I think this time you've said enough to make me want to leave this place. Still, I keep coming back for more of the same to fan the dying flame here inside these walls that seem to move a little closer every day. This is Carefree Highway Revisited, the show that celebrates the work of Gordon Lightfoot song by song, a proud member of the FM Podcast Network. I'm your host, Mike Messner, and along with me today is a fellow Lightfoot fan from Buffalo, New York, John Kolaga. John, thank you so much for joining me today.
Hey, Michael, it's a pleasure to be here.
How did you first get into Gordon's music?
Well, I grew up in the Niagara Falls, Buffalo, New York area, which, if you know your geography, is right on the Canadian border.
Yeah.
And so we got to listen to a lot of CBC radio, and also the Buffalo stations play a lot of Canadian music. So Gordon appeared on our playlist, I guess, with If You Could Read My Mind in about 1970. And he's been sort of a mainstay of Western New York radio since that time. I received the album Sundown for a Christmas present in 1974 when I was 15. And that was a real life changer for me. And I've been a fan ever since.
That record is indeed life-changing for a whole lot of people, and not the least of whom was Gordon himself, because now he's gotten international acclaim, not just in the States and Canada. What about viewing him in concert? Did you ever get a chance to see him?
Yes, I'm happy to say I did. I saw him after Sundown. I became a big fan and waited for him to come around, and he played at the Niagara Falls Convention Center in 1977, touring for Summertime Dream. I had really great seats for that. I was a senior in high school. And the following year, he played at probably the premier venue for hearing music in Western New York, which is Kleinhans Music Hall, which is where the Buffalo Philharmonic plays. And it was an astounding show. You know, the acoustics were amazing, and he was great. And then I saw him a few years later at a smaller venue called Melody Fair in about 1980. And I will say that he was not in a great physical shape at that time for that concert. I missed him a couple of times in the 80s. So I really only saw them the three times, but they were great shows.
And it sounds like those are all reasonably small venues. I've never been to Buffalo, but the way you describe them, I mean, these are not stadiums. These are reasonably intimate settings. Am I right in thinking that?
Well, the first one, the Niagara Falls Convention Center, is probably a little bigger. I would say it's about 10,000 people. And the other two are smaller, more in the 1,000 to 2,000 seat. But big enough, but not so big that they were stadium experiences.
Right. I don't think that Gordon's music lent itself to that. 10,000, I think, is probably the extent of the venue that he would really make a connection, just because that was not his style of music. This was not big time rock and roll like the Rolling Stones. So you today wanted to talk about Now and Then from the Cold on the Shoulder record. And as we're going to find out a little bit later, that one is a very deep track buried way down on the second side of the record. I wanted to talk a little bit about why we found this song interesting, and I'll go first on this one. It has an interesting form to it. Right when you think a stanza is about to end, he rolls into the next thought. There's a lot of fun internal rhyming in it, but it's still very eloquent, and it talks about heartbreak, and it talks about the idea of, I can't see myself leaving this relationship yet, and I'm stalling for time. I'm just trying to find some way to hang on to this a little bit longer, even if you know that it's just not going to be in the cards. So why did you want to talk about that song today?
Well, there's many reasons. I believe that Gordon Lightfoot was a genius at writing songs about emotions that most people are uncomfortable spending time talking about. You know, you have If You Could Read My Mind, which obviously is about marital failure, Sundown about jealousy and anger. And now and then, when it comes right down to it, I've been thinking about it. I think this song is really about weakness, about a person's inability to move on from a relationship and being really torn between those aspects of it that are very attractive and those that are much more difficult and harmful and hurtful. And I find it an incredibly unguarded and honest piece of music. We can talk about other aspects of it, but to me, it's really the sign of a great songwriting about a very subtle and important kind of mixture of emotions that many of us have had.
You said the word weakness, and I think that is something we are going to delve into, the idea that he doesn't have the strength to face reality to some degree or another. And there's a biographical aspect to that that we're going to get into in just a second. What to you would be the best setting for you to listen to this song? Or if you want to put it another way, the most cinematic place to listen to this? Or is this a song that you could listen to anytime, day or night, doing anything during any weather at any place?
Well, this song, I think, is less about the outdoors and nature and so forth, many of the themes that are prevalent in his song. So I think it's the kind of piece of music that you could listen to anytime, although I think it's quite an introspective type song. So, I mean, I have to say that since Gordon's death last May, I've been listening to a lot of Gordon Lightfoot more than I have in recent years. But normally I listen to his music in the fall. I really enjoy it for some reason. There's a resonance there that I subconsciously have made. But this is to me, it's a song that you could sit and have a cup of coffee or something a little stronger and just really delve into it. I think it's a song that ages very well and is very rich.
It does age, and I think it is, in a lot of ways, it's universal. Ironically, despite that, it was not released as a single, and it didn't show up on any of the compilation albums. And it's only been covered once. We'll talk about that as we go on. I think for me, I would want to listen to this at night, because my sense of it is that the argument that they have just had when he's writing this song has happened at the end of the day when they're both tired and maybe they've had a few things to drink. And so we all make the best decisions in the world, right? When we're exhausted and intoxicated. So he's just about at the point where he's saying, you know, this is it. I'm leaving. I can't stand this anymore. But then he's saying, but I can't face the uncertainty of what would be if I leave this. So I'm thinking night. I'm not thinking about it in a particular season, but I think during the nighttime, after dark, it would be the time that I would listen to this.
That makes sense. As I said, I think it's a very introspective, thoughtful song. I think probably later is better than earlier to sort of check this song out and just sort of let it wash over you.
Yeah, well said. There hasn't been a huge amount written about the origins of this song that I could find out. What I do know is that he wrote it at a time when his first marriage has just ended. And if the divorce papers are not finalized, they're about to be. But for all intents and purposes, his marriage to Britta was over. Kathy Smith is all over this album in terms of influences. And Nicholas Jennings said that the song, and I'm quoting directly, "The song describes how a relationship on its last legs continues to exert its power to attract and repel." I love the way that he phrased that. And that is the sum total, John, of everything I could find about how this song got written. Do you have an angle on this or anything you can add?
No, I do have a copy of a book called Chasing the Dragon, which you probably know about. It's a book that was written by Kathy Smith and about her life in rock and roll and with Lee Von Helm and Gordon Lightfoot and ultimately John Belushi. It does describe in some great detail a pretty rocky relationship that had ups and downs and a lot of hurtful behavior. So it seems to me to resonate with that. And I expect, like you, that this song originates out of his relationship with Kathy Smith. I've always felt that Gordon Lightfoot, with all due respect, is singularly unhelpful when describing what his songs are about and where they come from. In the liner notes from the songbook collection, He says it's about unrequited love. I think that's not correct. He did have a relationship. It's just fallen apart. It's not about unrequited love. It's about love that's on its last legs, as you said. So to me, Gordon is at heart a kind of a small town guy. He was raised in the church. He's very uncomfortable talking about fraught relationships. And yet in this song, it all comes through. And that's the amazing thing. He probably would never want to describe it out loud, but in the use of his language here, and this is what makes this song so great, it really captures the best parts and the worst parts of a relationship in 4 minutes. I mean, it's really an incredible song.
Yeah, he is a little bit more transparent than Dylan when he talks about where the songs came from, but this is among the most enigmatic. And wouldn't you know, when I went online to look at the songbook liner notes, that website was down. So thank you for bringing that up. Yeah, I agree with you. I don't think it's about unrequited love at all. I think it's about love lost. When I hear about unrequited, it's more like a love that never was, as opposed to a love that is dying. So yes, Let's look at the lyrics a little bit. And the lyrics are beautiful in all sorts of ways. I think this time you've said enough to make me want to leave this place. So again, he's angered by what this woman is saying. He's heard it before, but now he thinks some line has been crossed because he's saying, okay, this time you have gone too far. This time I don't want to be reminded of this anymore. I'm out of here. Still, I keep coming back for more of the same. To fan the dying flame here inside these walls that seem to move a little closer every day. And this idea that the flame is dying, the relationship isn't getting anywhere. And he knows that this isn't going to work out, but he's too attached, or as you said, John, too weak to make the break final. He can't quite turn the doorknob and walk out of the room.
Yes. The idea that he's just talked about what an awful time they've just had, and here he is fanning the flame, even trying to rekindle something here, suggests to me a sort of almost like somebody in the throes of an addiction of a certain sort. He knows it's not good for him, but he keeps coming back. It's a complex and quite an admission for him to make in a song that his fans get to hear, that he is kind of caught in the throes of this dilemma, and that's where he is when the song is taking place.
You mentioned the term addiction, and I think it's possible to be addicted to somebody. Lightfoot was at a certain age in his life that he certainly was an adult and had been an adult for some time, but he's just as vulnerable as anyone would be under those circumstances. And we do know that Gordon had an addictive personality. We know about the alcoholism. We know, thank God, that he got sober at some point. But I like the way that you said that, and it ties into other parts of his personality. There must be a way out of this crazy game we play out to the end. Let us just pretend a while. Think about the good things now and then. The fact that he's saying, let's pretend, I'm not quite sure what he's wanting to pretend. Is he wanting to pretend that everything is okay? Or is he wanting to pretend that we're back in the good old days? Because that's what he talks about in the next stanza. But he is asking for some sort of reprieve. He's trying to buy time, even though he knows they can never go back to the time when they were just absolutely puppy love with each other.
Well, yeah, I agree. I was thinking about the pretend word myself. And I think what it, to me, suggests is maybe because he knows the relationship is coming to an end, he's got a little perspective on it. It's almost like he's watching himself in this relationship in the way that you don't have when you're in the throes of love. He's almost observing himself in this relationship, almost like acting, almost like pretending that he's doing that. The other thing that struck me, and I know you're a student of English, the way he says, there must be a way out of this crazy game we play out to the game. He doesn't say, there's got to be a way for me to get out of this, or the way for you to get out of it. It's like somebody else is going to do something here because I can't do it. There's got to be a way out. It's a kind of a passive voice, which I think is interesting and appropriate for a person who just can't seem to turn the doorknob, as you say. He can't seem to get off his chair and move on. So he's hoping for something to happen to move him to the next step.
And that's another aspect, John, of addiction, the idea that you expect someone or something is going to come riding in on a white horse and they're going to make everything okay. And if anyone who's ever been in therapy for an addiction or from something where they need a serious change, one of the first things you learn is that no one is coming to rescue you. You have to do the work. You can do that in the company of a trained therapist, but it's not like somebody's going to come in, like your mommy or your daddy is going to come in and say, okay, sweetheart, now everything's going to be all right. And they take you inside after you've stubbed your toe. That's not going to happen here. And it's something that, again, goes back to Gordon's character having addictive tendencies, I guess the best way of saying it. Well, that's all the time we have for Here in the Public Feed. If you'd like to hear the rest of this conversation, along with all of our other extended and bonus episodes, become an FM Plus subscriber. Sign up in Apple Podcasts or at fmpods.com. You can see the show notes for details.